Okay, I just want to acknowledge also everything that I'm going to talk about today is the product of a huge collaborative team that's, I think it's up to 60 people or so now, but some of my co-investigators are listed here and some of the affiliations. Chris Shuey's been working with me for virtually the entire length of the time that we've done this work. Dr. David Begay is another faculty member, Navajo faculty member with me, Majeline Begay from the Navajo Division of Health, and Adrian Ettinger from Yale University, and then numerous people from our pediatrics and the Center for Development and Disabilities. And all the work that I'm going to talk about has been reviewed and approved by the Navajo Nation Research Review Board. They have their own research policy and have approval on everything that goes out. And I really want to also acknowledge the strength we've had in financial support to do this work, and especially from NIEHS that took the chance 20 years ago to start environmental justice community-based partnerships and just gave us the ability to start this all off. So the model that we've worked with, and I think this starts to address some of the discussion that we've had before, is really, we started this program in 1996 at the university, and trying to create a structure where we help to facilitate bringing together community members, healthcare practitioners, people who were in policy and decision positions, and most challenging, the research community, into a partnership where everybody was sitting at the table and responding in some coordinated effort. And we thought that sounded really great, and then found out that the biggest problem that we had was that no two of those constituencies speak the same language. And it became really apparent that whenever one person said something from their perspective, everyone else thought that they were blowing them out of the water on their concerns. And it took a long time just to back up and start talking about what people mean when people say something, and how many of these problems were really common, and that some of the solutions were going to move everyone forward in reaching their goals. Our main issue, and I'm only going to talk about the Navajo work today, we could use the same description for a lot of the work we've done with the Sioux, but for time's sake, we'll keep it to the Navajo. And it's a uranium mining area. It's the largest deposit of high-grade uranium ore in the country, arguably in the world. Colorado Plateau was heavily mined for the development of the atomic bomb starting in the mid-1940s and going through the closure of the last mine in the mid-1980s. These are some of the pictures that occurred during the active mining period, and in the center, what you can see is this map of the Navajo Nation. It's 110 chapters, which are sort of the equivalent of our counties, local government structures. The shading in these areas indicates where the mining occurred. So the white chapters had no history of mining, and then it phases all the way through these darkest shades of gray, where they've had up to four different identified exposure types, so either mine waste still in the community, abandoned mines themselves, water sources that are contaminated with uranium materials that were actually used in construction of home from these waste sites. So this is the context that we work in. Our original work to try and focus this a little more was down in this area that's outlined in the dark lines, the Eastern Agency, and it also represented a mixture of chapters that were affected. These are some of the pictures of what's been left behind. As of 2007, in a series of congressional hearings, over 1,100 unremediated waste sites were identified on Navajo associated with more than 500 abandoned mines. And this number may sound large. For the Western U.S. as a whole, 10,400 abandoned uranium mines have been identified. And I just did a briefing on hard rock mining impacts across the country, and there's actually about 500,000 abandoned hard rock mines with mixtures of metals associated with somewhere in the couple hundred thousand mine sites themselves. So the problem that we're dealing with is really not unique to Navajo Nation. The community's concerns that started these projects was a very high rate of diabetes, and this particular work started in between 1996 and 2000. Their rates of chronic kidney disease were substantially elevated above those in the rest of the country, and more troubling was that we had a lot of teenagers on dialysis. We had the earliest onset of chronic kidney disease in the country, and more than 30% of the Navajo Nation lacks access to regulated water, and this compares to 12% of tribal populations in the country and to 0.6% of the non-tribal population across the country. This in Navajo means that there's a substantial use of unregulated water sources. During the CCC, about 500 wells were located across Navajo, primarily for livestock watering. It's a very agricultural, livestock-based economy and very sparse distribution of population. Anthropogenic and natural uranium sources, as well as arsenic and other metals, were mined there because they are there. And so the potential for both types of contamination was high. And yet these sources had never been monitored for water quality. So the Diné Project is sort of the name of this whole group. It's the Diné Network for Environmental Health. And Diné meaning the people, the name that the Navajo used to refer to themselves. We started working with 20 communities. They came to us and asked if we could come up with a scientific study design that would help them identify whether drinking this contaminated water was actually leading to this increase in kidney disease because of the metals which were known to kidney toxicants. We worked for a long time with the communities back and forth on what we would need to have a valid scientific study and what they would need to have a study that people in the community would respect and respond truthfully to. And we spent probably 6 months just designing the survey interactively that we started with. And one of the most interesting things for us was at the end of that period of time, after we'd gone through a whole thing of what it takes to have valid research, because this was a huge concern for them, they came back to us and said, why are you only doing surveys? Why aren't you taking blood samples? And I just sort of looked at them because it never occurred to me that we would be allowed to do that and explain that. And they said, but it's only half a study if you don't confirm this self-report from the surveys. And I said, well, you're going to have to intercede with government and do whatever on that. So they did. They brought in the IRB, and the IRB said, we think that this is necessary and the community wants it, and so we want you to go ahead and do that. Our initial studies indeed confirmed that exposures during the active mining period did increase the risk for kidney disease as suspected, but the bigger problem was the later exposures were associated, the long-term chronic low-level exposures were associated with increased risk for hypertension and autoimmune disease. This is from the survey data, and this is in the context of all the other known risk factors. We also have been in the process of confirming this with the blood and urine samples that we have collected, and the risk is not trivial. These are odds ratios on the right, with the red being a doubling of risk, and we actually have a dose response curve where you can see that with each additional category of exposure people report, their risk goes up by another 30 to 50%. We've done a lot of communication to avoid risk, to show people not to walk in areas where these children are walking, which is contaminated soils. We've taken politicians on tours to show them on the ground where the problems are. We've set up mobile clinics. This is an emergency removal of 18 inches of contaminated soil in one community that EPA undertook after we had done some sampling in the area. This is our staff on the lower right-hand side collecting blood and urine in one of the staff's homes and analyzing to get a snapshot of what the health of the community was like before they were relocated. Designed water signs that have been used to post across all of Navajo Nation so that we have some consistency. Whenever someone walks into a chapter house, they can see these very large yellow signs that were designed by the community, and they're usually in Navajo and not Chinese or hieroglyphics or whatever that is up there. The font obviously isn't on this computer. Anyway, in 2007, Henry Waxman got wind of the problem from a series that was written by a reporter in the LA Times and started congressional hearings to develop a five-year plan to address this problem long-term. In 2009, health studies were added to that. We participated in those hearings and also partnered on the multi-agency federal and Navajo team to get the word out and inform people about what the problems were. The partnership has expanded from our original four Navajo field staff to a team now that's well over 40 and well over half Navajo. All of the surveys are multilingual. The language is very descriptive and conceptual, so it's not one that can be literally translated word for word. It's also very regional, and so to convey these quite sensitive concepts requires a lot of back and forth to make sure that the whole team itself is consistent. And then we're also working with both the Navajo and the federal agencies to make sure that there is some continuity on what we do and engagement of people that can actually change the decision process. This is the design of the birth cohort study, and in the light blue are the four partners that are going ahead. We have the research lead, CDC is managing the project, the cooperative agreement, Navajo Area Indian Health Service is working with us again. They also worked with us on the blood and urine sampling, and Navajo Division of Health, again, is staffing all of the field survey work. Our field staff will do all the environmental collection. It's an amazingly comprehensive study. We have our main exposure inputs that we'll be looking at, but then also all of the known and suspected modifiers of birth outcomes, and then looking both at reproductive outcomes and developmental outcomes through the first year of life, assuming we ever get through OMB, who's had it for 1 year now. This will allow us to start looking at a younger population. 25% of the births on Navajo are going to be to women between 14 and 18 years old, which is not a group that we have had a lot of contact with in the past. Our Diné population was an average age of 55. And so one of the things that we have done is to go to social media, and I'm not going to show you this whole thing, but just to give you a sense of how we're trying to reach them. Whoops. Not very loud. And the person who's doing the media work is a Navajo colleague who has done a lot of oral history around some of the Hopi Navajo land dispute work and serialized work on YouTube before. And one of the things people have really liked is he's interviewing a wide age range. He's got a lot of elderly interviews. We're posting new media every month, trying to get at least two new ones up each month. And one of the things that we've gotten a lot of feedback on is that it's a very difficult and emotional topic, and because he's portraying it in a way that is very beautiful, it is really lessening the stress around the project, and it's really helping people feel that this is a community effort to move forward with. So just in closing, this team over a long, 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 long time, I think, has finally managed to engage all of the parts of our original circle, and I will say that the research community has been the hardest, but we now have a very active team of bench scientists that are involved very intimately with the community and moving back and forth on analyzing the samples, interpreting the data, and doing presentations as well. This is the structure of the team. The names in orange are the Navajo team members who are spread pretty much through all the organizations. And just in closing, this is why we're doing the work that we're doing. This is the grandson of one of our staff, and this is the community where the land has been completely stripped away. In the back, you see a little gray tailings pile where the little boy is sitting. Just to his right is another long mine pile that has not been remediated. So. So thank you very much for your time.